My name is Dorothy Roberson. I am currently known as Chicago's Tina Turner tribute artist. I'm going to tell you the story of how I took the unintended path to becoming one of the greatest Tina Turner tribute artists in Chicago and perhaps throughout the USA. I'm thinking I might be one of the best Tina Turner tribute artists, and how I just accidentally discovered late in life that I could sing her music as well as her gestures, her dance move, and the whole package of Tina Turner with the legs, the lips, the cheekbones, the height. Pretty much people have really on many occasions thought that I was actually the real Tina Turner. So I'm going to go back to the beginning of how I took the path, the unintended path of becoming Tina Turner. This was definitely nothing that I had ever aspired to do, purely accidental that I discovered the Tina Turner inside of me. So let me back up. I was born and raised in Arkansas. Grew up singing, well, actually in my teenage years, singing in a Pentecostal church in Arkansas. Became very close with the bishop and his family and his children. We went to high school together. Spent a lot of time with the pastor and his wife and children, very active in the church and definitely in the choir. So very charismatic church that I grew up singing in, and it was very strict and traditional. Matter of fact, in the 70s, I did not listen to any type of secular music, just gospel. That's how it was back then. Especially in certain churches, you only listen to one type of music because it was thought to be sinful. Yes, that's the way it was, and I had no problem with just listening. I love, absolutely love gospel music. I mean, just really, really, really love it. So I graduated in the mid-70s, and shortly thereafter, my family moved to Chicago, where I kept the music going. I became a member of the choir of the church that I attended when I moved to Chicago, and I also did some community singing with community groups and trios when I moved to Chicago. So I kept the gospel music going. So as I matured, got a little older, people began to tell me, I know you're singing gospel, but you really remind me of Tina Turner. And I go like, you got to be off of your rocker. I do not see that at all. I thought it was a big joke. Now, mind you, I like wearing my hair big, especially when I came to Chicago. You know, I changed my hair. I was a little conservative girl when I moved here. But I like the big afro, the bold colors, auburn. So when people often said, you remind me of Tina Turner, I said, oh, no way. It's just my hair. I'm a gospel singer. I heard it, and I just thought it was so far-fetched. I go, Tina Turner is a rock and roll icon. I'm just a gospel singer, just a gospel singer, but with a very powerful voice and a very good stage presence whenever I sang gospel. I've always been told that my stage presence was phenomenal. I've heard that ever since I've been singing. So anyway, after living in Chicago, actually, about 3 years, I met my first husband. He was also, you know, involved in church. And we got married and had two children. And we both didn't know. We were both young when we got married. And there were definitely some problems between us. So I stayed in the marriage because I was afraid to, you know, to raise my two daughters alone. But I took all I could take. He was not the best, and probably because, you know, he did not have a father. There's a lot of hurt without getting into it. He just did not know how to be a husband, just to make a long story short. And somehow I think he did that the best that he could. But anyway, we divorced, and we were married for 10 years, had two daughters. So I started to work on a college campus. Oh, no, let me back up. No, I worked a few years at a college campus before we divorced. So I was working on a college campus before we divorced. So, yeah, I continued to work there. So I you know, rebuilt my life, was able to, as a single mom, which was very difficult because I didn't have any help raising my my daughters. Most of my family was in Arkansas. When my mom had died, came to Chicago when she passed away. So basically everything was on me. And but I worked very hard to raise my daughters. And I became a student at the university where I worked. I've always wanted to finish my bachelor's degree. And working for the university, of course, you can get a tuition waiver. You can take a couple classes and not have it to pay for them. So later in life, that's what I did. And the university had heard that I was a singer. So for African American History Month every year, the news got out that I was a dynamic gospel singer. I would do a Black History program for the college campus every February, invite elementary schools out, talking about how gospel music, the different styles of gospel music. Even did the history of slave music, went over very well. I became a big hit doing Black History Month when I told the story of the African music beginning in the cotton fields and the Negro spirituals, and brought it up to date to what gospel music sounds like today, and sang the different styles, had a band, backup singers. I absolutely love singing gospel music, and I thought I would do it for life. I never really, as I stated earlier, aspired to do anything outside of gospel. So, yeah, I became branded more and more like, oh, my God, you remind me of Tina Turner. On the college campus where I work, I heard it daily. When I went out to sing at various churches, I heard it then. And I was on the streets of Chicago. People often said, you know who you look like? Like, I know you're going to say Tina Turner. And perhaps just a little like Chaka Khan. So, yeah, let me just... Right in the middle of this, so to prove to you that I am currently, at the age of 64 now, I am truly Chicago's Tina Turner. And I'm going to sing you a couple of bars of the song to let you know that I truly am Chicago's Tina Turner, okay? Oh, there's something on my mind. Won't somebody please? Please tell me what's wrong. And then there's this one where won so many Grammy. I say she won so many Grammys for this song, but I'm going to say I won Grammy for this song. You must I'm just a handle. The touch of your hand make my pulse react. That is only the thrill of boy meeting girls. Opposites attract. It's physical. Only logical. You must try to ignore that it means more than that. Whoa, what love got to do with it? What's love? A second-hand emotion. What's love got to do with it? Who needs a heart when a heart can be broken? All right, so that was just a little sample of what I do. Though I, as I matured, I discovered, I could sing some, Aretha Franklin type music. In fact, if I were to describe my voice, I would say a combination of Aretha Franklin, Gladys, and gospel artists. I would say maybe Shirley Caesar or Yolanda Adams. So I got four mixtures, I would say, within my voice. So that's Aretha, Gladys, and then Yolanda Adams and Shirley Caesar. Those four people. I think my voice is kind of like a mixture of those four great, just fantastic artists. So anyway, I did, like I said, a gospel tribute every year for Black History Month, and it was a big hit. I did it for 10 years. So after being divorced for about 10 to 12 years, my spiritual father, or my pastor, who, and I was very close to he and family in Arkansas, he passed away. And so I went back to my hometown of Arkansas for the burial, where I bumped into a guy I dated when I was a teenager. And he was divorced, and we went out for coffee, and my godmother wishes, who I told her I was going out for coffee, but he was actually known as the town's drunk, even though he was able to maintain a good job, drove a decent vehicle, but I guess you would call him a functional alcoholic. Good job, but my family, my spiritual family, or my adopted spiritual family, the pastor's wife, did not think it was a good idea for me to go out for coffee with him, because kind of like make me feel that he was not good enough for me, which she was absolutely right. But having a reputation that he had of just drinking himself to death, I thought I could, do something to encourage him to get back on the right path, because he was a very, very smart man. I remember, now when we dated when we were a teen, he was older than me, of course, and we weren't supposed to be doing that. I was around 14 or 15, and he was around 20, had been to Vietnam, didn't stay long because his father got sick. His family owned a farm, one of the few families, black families, that actually had land in the South and had a very productive farm. So he, being the oldest son, his father got sick. He had to come home and take care of his father. Was a kidney failure. He was on dialysis, could no longer handle the farm business. So my ex-husband, took over for him, to farm the land and, keep the land tilled and everything. So anyway, I told him when we went out for coffee that the family did not really approve of me It's just going out for coffee, but I'll tell you one thing. As a teenager, I was crazy about this guy. I was so fascinated by him. I would describe him at that time when I was a teenager. He looked like he could have been like a Denzel Washington type. So, always handsome to me. Tall, chocolate, broad shoulders, just nice, tight, round butt, just this beautiful chocolate, velvety, smooth skin, just curly hair that was just laid so neatly on the back of his neck. I just thought, yeah, he was Denzel Washington type back then. So anyway, of course, he had four children when I met him. His first marriage didn't work. His wife left him. He didn't get into details what happened, and neither did I. We were just having coffee, and I'm trying to inspire him to put down the bottle, just to let him know where the people were, you know, seemed to be judging him. But I knew, you know, he was a decent person. So I mean, like, you know, you can do better than that. You know, I know you've been drinking, your eyes are red, but there is a person inside of you, you know, that exists. The better part of you exists. You know, you just need to just tap into your spirituality so you can overcome this. So anyway, I came back to Chicago, and he began calling me, and, you know, saying his life is beginning to change. I said, great. So at that time, now mind you, my ex-husband grew up in the same church that I was singing in the choir, but he stopped going to church after, I guess, he went to Vietnam. When he came back, he did not want to be involved in his church. His father was a deacon. His sisters were very active. All his family was active in church, but he did not go. So anyway, I came to back Chicago, and I attended a church that really did a lot of teachings on empowering black men on how to help them overcome addiction. It's all about empowering black men. So I would send him sermon tapes that my pastor preached, and he would call to thank me and said he got so much out of them, how he was so inspired, you know, by the tapes that I sent him. And he goes, like, you know, eventually I'm going to come visit you in Chicago. I'm like, okay, well, you can. You just let me know. And we just kept talking and getting closer and smiling through the phone at each other. And, you know, I began to, I guess, say the feelings that I had for him when I was a teenager were rekindled. But I didn't say anything. I was waiting for him to say something first. And he goes, like, I would like to come to Chicago to visit you, to thank you in person for all the, you know, the encouragement and inspiration you've given me. So, yeah, he came. We went out to dinner, had the best time, and I had my teenage daughter, my oldest daughter, I have two daughters, had moved out young as a teenager. She had a child at very young and wanted to be grown early, so I'm just raising my youngest daughter, and their father was not active in their lives, so my second ex-husband really, they hit it off. He hit it off with my youngest daughter. She, you know, just, you know, really, he was really good with her. And, you know, gave her attention that she didn't get from her biological dad. Whenever he would come to Chicago, let me back up. What made things so exciting, this man would get off work on a Friday evening. Now, the drive from Arkansas to where he was coming from was about 10 hours. This man would go to work on Friday, pack his clothes, and as soon as he would get out from work, he would drive to see me. Let me clarify that. He would drive up here to see me every month, and I was so impressed by that, and so was my friends. I mean, he would be tired. He would not go home after work. He'd just come straight here to see me, and I just thought that was, oh, this man really loves me. He has to, you know, to take that long ride every month. And we'd go to church together. We'd go to movies, concert. Even though he was a Southern boy, he seemed to enjoy, you know, all the cultural things that I liked. And isn't that what they do? To get you, you know, things that they probably would never do on their own. They pretend they like it and enjoy it just to try to get you. So he was kind of typical, like, let me say, a lot of men are. They say what you want them to say. I go like, you know, if I like art, they're going to, if I tell my ex-husband that I like art, he's going to say I love it. Because he had a mission. That was to get me out of Chicago. So when he came up, after my first divorce, I was able to purchase my own nice home. Nice furniture and just, you know, have the basic. I guess somewhat middle class, you know. I wasn't doing bad. So when he would visit me, I had started going back to school in my late 40s because, as I stated earlier, we could get tuition waivers. So I always wanted to finish my degree, but I was afraid. I'd been out of school so long. And then I would have to go back to school with the young kids, and I was really intimidated by being in a class with young kids. So when I met him, I was in school working toward my bachelor's in sociology, I was doing really well in school. And also when I met him, I began to tap into my acting skills. So I did a little play with Bernadette Stennis, Thelma, from Good Times. We did a gospel play together in Chicago. I had a small role, but nevertheless, it was a role. So, I became really interesting to, you know, to get my acting skills up to where my music was. I'm a much more advanced singer than I was an actress. And prior to that, with Bernadette Stennis, I did do a play with the Black Ensemble many years ago. And then I had a small role in that, and that was when I was married to my first husband. He was also into the art, into acting. So we were both given small parts, and that's when I fell in love with acting, even though I didn't have a speaking part. I was supporting actress. So, yeah, so that was really good. That play, The Other Cinderella, ran about, I'd say about 3 or 4 months. We did day shows for the kids, a musical version of Black Cinderella. It was a very good play. So that was my first introduction into acting. And then this play with gospel musical with Bernadette Stennis from Good Times, Thelma for Good Times. So I was doing all of that when I met my husband, just happening to, you know, excited about going back to school after being out so many years. So those classes were coming along well, trying to do my gospel singer and raise my, you know, teenage daughter. He kept coming to visiting me and whispering sweet nothings in my ear. And then he popped a question. You're like, I'm really tired of getting on the road every month driving up to see you. Will you marry me? I was so in love at that point. But I was smart enough to say, look. And when he proposed to me, mind you, I had just refinanced my house. Wait a minute, I just refinanced my house. There's no equity in it. If I were to sell my house, I'd get absolutely nothing. And then I told him, no, let's just wait a while because I created a lot of bills. And I've always been told, don't take bills into a new marriage, be responsible for your own, clean up your own credit. So I brought that to his attention. I go like, you know what? I want to say yes, but I need to clear up my credit before marrying you. And I explained to him why. And he was like, no need for that. He said, look, we're both getting older, and we don't have a lot of time to wait. I will be responsible for taking care of all of your bills. I just want to marry you and take you back home. I go like, oh, my God, what do I do? I'm talking with friends. And, you know, a lot of my girlfriends, they are hopeless romanticists. Girl, marry that man. He drives up here to see you every month. And then he spoils you, and he treats your daughter so nice. You should just marry him, you know? And you're like, I don't know. I'm just torn. I do love this man, and I hate to see him. He won't get on a plane to come and see me. Because I was, like I said, in school and working, it was better for him to travel to see me as opposed to me going down there. And so let me tell you, my home state of Arkansas, where I live, the population was 5,000. I had been gone many, many years. About, 30 years or so that I had left there. I'm moving to Chicago. So, but before we got married, he wanted to introduce me to his adult children by his first wife. And, you know, they seemed pleasant. I'm not sure, you know, I can't really say, but they seemed pleasant. But later on, I kind of found out they were just more or less just tolerating me. They didn't want to share the father. I guess I could kind of like, that's how I felt. That, I don't know, I think even as an adult, children still want their parents to get back together, you know. So it's just something I felt. But anyway, they were friendly, you know, his daughter and his four sons, you know. And so I saw his house. It wasn't in good condition at all. But I didn't see how it wasn't as good as the house that I lived in Chicago. And then, you know, not having a woman around to fix things up and kind of like inspire you to put down, to pull up old rugs and patch holes in the wall and ceilings and stuff like that. It takes a woman a lot of times to point out what needs to be done in a home. But I was in love. I came back to Chicago, still trying to figure out what I should do. And I did talk to, I have a pastor and his wife are very good friends of mine. We all went to church together. And I told him and his wife that I was moving back to Arkansas. He go like, oh, my God. The pastor said, after you have worked so hard, you bought your own house, you're in school, you're doing so well. He go like, are you sure you want to do that? Oh, yes, I am in love. I go like, he said, because my husband did tell me, you know, I told him, you know, I hate to give up school, but, other than not wanting him to be responsible for the bills I created, I also offer him the excuse of, you know, I'm in school now, and I'm working toward my degree, and the university is paying for my classes, so I'm doing really well in school. So that was another thing to look. First, I want to be responsible for my own bills. I don't want you to take them on. And then secondly, I want to finish my college education, going back to school in my late 40s to find out it just built confidence in me that I actually was doing good. And I was, like I said, I was a little intimidated because most of the students were of young age, and here I am probably was older than some of the writers of those sociology books that we studied from. But anyway, he goes like, well, I tell you what, you marry me, you do not have to work. You can just go back to school full time, and you can also, you know, I'll put you in a music studio so you can record your gospel music. No worries, you know, I got you. I'm gonna spoil you. So then I said yes, So I moved. I sold my house, gave away my furniture, and took very few pieces of furniture with me because he actually had hitched the U-Haul truck onto his F-150 to move a few items back. I had, you know, shipped some clothing and dishes ahead to his house, but pretty much I gave away, and I had very nice furniture. I gave it away, basically, and took very few things with me. And, my daughter, my youngest daughter, did not want to go. She heard stories about the South. She put up a big fight. I don't want to go to that little tiny town. I'm like, well, you have no choice. You're a sophomore in school. You graduate, and then you can do whatever you want. So we got down there. You know, we got married in Chicago, so let me say this. We got down there, and as soon as we kind of like settled in, he became so distant, my husband did. Like day one, after we woke up the next day, after we had moved back, he acted like I was a stranger. It's just like, where did this man that was pursuing me go overnight? So I didn't think anything of it. He went back to work, playing a nice dinner waiting for him, you know, nice romantic music and just candles, good southern meal, bath drawn for him. And he would like, came in with that look on his face like, why you do this? He just walked past me and go straight to the bedroom and close the door. Like, wait a minute. I prepared this dinner for you. But anyway, I'm just going to fast forward so I can tell you the whole story. So this is a story I definitely want to share with the real Tina Turner. Because her music, I'm going to get into it a little bit. It's what saved my life. There's so many similarities between she and I, and I think she would, you know, be very interesting in how my life led to me doing her music. But anyway, after 6 months, I realized I had made a terrible mistake. Things didn't change. He was very distant. He did not take me anywhere. And none of the things that he promised me, he made good on. I told him, you said I can go back to school. Yeah, go like, you better take out a loan. Like, I don't have that kind of money, but that's not what he told me. Nothing about doing any gospel recording. And I go like, what about, you know, you told me, okay, I'm going to take care of your bills. No. He did not take care of my bills. That was a lie. So he just lied. All the promises he made to me did not pan out. He lied. So after 6 months, I knew that was it, how he was treating me. But I was determined to let my daughter finish out her high school, you know, because she was a sophomore when we left Chicago. So I couldn't be dragging her up and down the road. So I had to stay there until she walked across the stage to receive her diploma. And then I knew I was hightailing it back to Chicago. I went to counseling when I was down there, and I had to drive about 90 miles to find a counselor to tell him the kind of pressure that I was on and how my husband was treating me. And he said, well, see if you can get him to come to the next session. So my husband went, like I said, it was a 90-mile drive, And he began to tell the counselor, all she does is talk about Chicago. And the counselor said, are you creating new memories with her? You know, if you're not creating, doing anything with her, of course it's normal. She's going to bring up, when I was in Chicago, I did this and that. So anyway, my husband went to the second session, and the counselor began to ask him questions and me questions. And he'd be like, so that Monday after he had met my husband, I called back to the office, and I go like, now that you've met my husband, and you met me, you talked to the both of us. Now, I know counselors don't give you advice. They do not tell you what to do. They do not tell you what to do. So something this counselor saw in my husband, and I'm sure he broke some rules, ethic-wise, or oath that he take. They don't tell you what to do. So I said, now that you met both of us, what do you propose? He said, go back to Chicago and follow your dreams. And that hurt me so bad, because I wanted him to say, just hold on, you know, just be prayerful, come back for some more sessions, don't give up. That's what I thought he was going to say. That's what I was hoping, because I did not want to come back to Chicago. I had nothing except my oldest daughter and my granddaughter was here, but I had no job. I resigned my job, no house. So that is not what I wanted the counselor to tell me. I wanted him to tell me that there was hope, and he did not. So I began to slowly put things in a suitcase, counting the days to where my daughter would be walking across the stage with her diploma. That was the only thing that was keeping me there. And I began to tell my husband, unless you go for counseling and we get help, as soon as my daughter walked across the stage, I'm out of here. I go like, I don't have no money. And what I told him, I'm like, I would take my chance of being homeless than to stay down here. You lured me down here for this. I would take my chances on being homeless in Chicago than allow you to mistreat me the way that you have. So I don't know if he thought I was kidding, but day by day I was packing up my boxes to ship them ahead to my daughter, who had a part-time job and was a teenager raising a child, and I didn't want to be a burden to her, but I didn't have no other place to go but back to my daughter. So I came back with just enough money to drive back Chicago, gas money. I had absolutely nothing, just basically my clothes, and I felt so bad living with my daughter who was struggling. And I tried to get my job back, and I didn't want to start all over again. After 2 years of trying, they hired me back, but at a much lower pay scale. They hired me back reflecting that there was a break in the service that I had left in return. So that basically they hired me like I was a new hire, and I was not. I had given 15 years to them, and I had to work about a year, 6 months to a year without benefits, without health benefits. That's what you do to people who are new. So, but I was so happy to get my feet back in the door. I didn't complain. I was just so happy, you know, being on familiar territory and, you know, working back at the place where I knew a lot of people. So, yes, I took it. I mean, I could have continued to look for other employment, but I took it, and I was grateful. So after working, staying with my daughter, and then I moved in with my girlfriend closer to my job. She had a big family. It was crowded, but she took me in. A very good friend who sang, she and I sang gospel together before I left. She's also plays the organ for her church. So we did a lot of music together, and we were like sisters. She let me move with her. So I began to save money so I could get my own apartment. So I did get my own apartment, and just when I thought things were really getting better, my job announced that they were cutting my hours and putting me in a different department, which means that I lost part of my pension. When you go from full-time to part-time, you lose some of your pension. But anyway, so what I would do, fast forward, I started thinking about what people had told me all these years. They're like, I need to make some money. Why don't I start just experimenting with Tina Turner music? So somebody helped me buy a portable system to get my business license. So what I would do, actually, you would not believe that, I used to put my portable sound system inside my suitcase along with my wig and hair and drag it to work every day. And after work, I got off at 2 o'clock p.m., 9 to 2 are my hours, and I would go sing on two popular streets in Chicago, State Street and Chicago and Michigan Avenue, just to see if I could sing well enough. Tina Turner, I could sing now, but to see if I could sing Tina Turner well enough to get us some money so I could keep my phone bill on and keep my light bill paid, and just still trying to rebuild my life from scratch with nothing. So I began this thing. I was really nervous about doing it. So I'm going to tell you my family's response when I told them that I was going to order this red fringe dress and this big hair and stand on the streets of Chicago singing Tina Turner. I have to tell you when I really, so that's coming up in part two. So I'm going to tell you this now. And yes, I would perform on the street for about 4 to 5 hours. My feet were swollen and blistered. I'd go home and soak them in apple cider vinegar, go to work for 4 hours, and then go back on the street. And this was done. I did this on public transportation, pulling a heavy portable sound system in my costume, in my suitcase. I would go sing in front of prominent buildings on State Street and Michigan Avenue, and I got a big following. People start stopping and throwing money in my basket, and I'm just like shaking in my shoe, not sure if I was going to be good enough to earn a few dollars, but for some time, newspaper walked up on me, and that is when I really began to have more confidence in doing Tina Turner. They're like, oh, my God, we never saw anybody who could do Tina Turner as well as you do. We're going to write an article about you. And he's, but I got to run it past my editor or whatever. So I'm thinking this is going to be way in the distant future. Did you know I was in the paper the following day, and some of my friends had to call me and say, hey, did you know you're famous now? You on page 8 of the Chicago Sun-Times. And I, of course, I ran out to try to buy all the papers up. And there I was. And the caption read, Tina, is that you? And it went on to say that we bumped into this lady on the street who was belching out Tina Turner greatest hits. I mean, it gave me, you know, a great plug. I mean, got a very nice picture of me right in front of the Chicago Theater emblem of singing. They were very impressed. And then after that, Chicago Tribune walked up on me, and they wrote, you know, how good I was. And a radio station, a few radio stations began to interview me. And I didn't go into depth of what happened, but I just told them I went through a divorce, and I came to sing on the street to supplement my income. So yes, it, then I would draw every summer. This is when I did it. Every summer I did it from 54, when I was 54 years old, until I was 60. So that is, I did it on the street for 6 years. Yes, I did every summer. I don't care. My feet would be hurting. The ball of my feet, the back of my feet would be, it would be so painful until after I performed, literally I had to put on some flip-flops to make it to my destination because of the high heel, the pressure. But I wanted to look that look, and I wanted to get those tips.
So, you know, no pain, no gain. So I kept singing, then wound up getting in magazines, and the people start, so let me back up. Yes. So every summer, I was standing on that corner, and that corner would be crowded with people with cameras. I'm telling you, I had a lot of fans. They were so impressed with me. Actually, the bus driver would pull over and jump off the bus to bring money to put in my tip container. The cab driver would honk the horn and ask me after I got off duty from singing, like, look, I couldn't get to you earlier, but you're a phenomenal singer, and reached me tips outside their cab window. So those things just went on, and finally I'm really convinced that I really do have this Tina thing going. I mean, the tips were enormous. It was enough to keep those bills paid that I wanted, you know, help with. So I soared until someone had to tell me, you need to get your business card so people can hire you for birthday weddings. I'm like, no, I just want to sing on the street. They're like, no, you do not. You need to, get yourself together. So, I'm telling you, the love that the city of Chicago gave to me, it healed me. I didn't go into these details as to why I was there. But anyway, people, music is therapeutic, and they would thank me for being on that corner every summer. They'd be like, you coming out here means so much to us. And they were telling me, like, we had a bad day at work, and then there you were standing on that corner. And they thought they could listen to me for a few minutes. They could not leave. They could not leave. They could not believe how much I look like Tina and how much I sound like Tina. So I was told, get some business cards made so people could book you for parties, wedding, etc. So I did that, and I began to, you know, pass out my business card. And sure enough, people began to book me for birthday parties, weddings, retirement parties. And my name just grew. It just, people had filmed me so much. Every event that I did, somebody was at the event. Look, are you the lady that used to be singing on the street? I have a video of you right here. And that was always fascinating when I was booked by a client to find out that somebody had recordings of me. It's just about every booking that I got, I had been in contact with one of the person at attending the party, if not the client, him or herself. Somebody attended that party had clippings of me, and that always was so amazing to get there and to see, like, I know you're good. You were just so good out there. So, look, when I came back to Chicago, that music, doing the music was so therapeutic for me. I was crying on the inside. I was embarrassed because I know people were saying she done gave up the house for what, and now she came back to Chicago with nothing. So I was hurting, and I needed to, not only I needed to get out there to supplement my income, but music was therapeutic for me. So as much as the people would gather around me and saying how the music helped them get through something, they had no idea that I was suffering so, so, so deeply about my divorce, how crushed I was that it did not work, having to start my life all over from nothing in your 50s. I mean, I had to get a new occupation of singing on the street at a time when most people in their 50s are getting ready to retire and enjoy their life. And here I am just trying to keep food on my table and to take care of the basic things. So that was really, that stayed in the forefront of my mind, like, man, everybody else getting ready to retire and I have to sing on this street. Now, I could have tried to get another part-time job, but at that time I was so confused and everything wasn't crystal clear of how I should do everything, because it felt like somebody had close family member of mine had passed away. That divorce, me coming back to Chicago with nothing. It was just like, I just felt that was, I mean, I just died on the inside. And I just didn't feel like moving around trying to get another career. So my option, okay, I work a few hours a day. I'm just going to sing on the street. That's all my mind, I guess, was locked up. I couldn't, you probably thinking, well, you just could have got another job. But I was mentally paralyzed in some ways. And I was just trying to do the music, basically, besides making ends meet, to do therapy on myself. Music cheers me up. So, I guess people began to book me so frequently, even book me out of town. Like, I've gone to Nebraska, but flown to Denver, Colorado, two times. Of course, you know, surrounding city like Detroit. But what really got it is when I opened up for Jeffrey Osborne in 2018. He came to Chicago to do the South Shore Summer Festival, and I had put together a nice band. I mean, they were already together, but I had a 6-piece band and 3 background singers. And for all the people who wonder what happened to me, you know, they didn't see me on the street anymore because I got so many bookings I could not go back. Here I was, and I joke. I said, Jeffrey Osborne thought all those people came to see him, and he is a dynamic performer. But when they saw my name on the advertisement, they were like, is that the lady that we used to see singing on the street? Is she going to be opening up for Jeffrey Osborne? So I think so many people came to see if it was actually me, because I just all of a sudden disappeared from not being on the street anymore. And once I walked out, the love and the claps that I got when they saw, oh, my God, she has moved up in the world. She is opening up for Jeffrey Osborne. There was so much love outside. I mean, I could just feel the love in that park. I think we had about maybe 4,000 to 5,000 people. I was so touched. I could not believe that I was on a stage that big opening up for Jeffrey Osborne. So I tell you, God is good. I just got to tell Tina Turner how her music saved my life. I reinvented myself. Never thought I could bounce back from something so devastating so late in life. So look, I did go on. I graduated from college. I have my bachelor's degree in sociology. So I kind of like, in the midst of my music, I do little sociological talks, you know, about the things that's going on in our world. And I do have the gift of gab, but I try to mostly sing. But it's hard not to talk in between my songs and give them tidbits of my life and talk about, you know, social justice and things like that. So I want to take my music at a total different level, you know, to talk about, you know, the things that, you know, race relations, get people attention with my music, and then use my sociology to try to bring people together. But I just pray, the biggest dream in my bucket list is to meet the real Tina Turner, to put my arms around her, to explain to her how I had no intentions of becoming her. Just experimenting with her music to see if I could sing her music good enough to get a few dollars to keep my phone on and to keep food on my table. So now I am known throughout the city of Chicago. I am so respected and loved in this city. And I want to travel the world, more of the world, doing my Tina Turner and sharing my story of survival to tell women and to tell young girls to fall in love with themselves, so they can pick the right mate. So there were some things in me that was unsettled, and I blame myself more than my ex-husband, because something was not right in me for me to choose him. So I could say, yeah, he treated me like a dog and he treated me wrong, but I am accepting responsibility, because it had my esteem level and love for myself been greater, I would not have married him. So that's what I have discovered, self-love and all the other many hidden talents that I have within me. I would have never discovered it had it not been for the pain. Therefore, Tina Turner, if you're out there, please, please listen to my story. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart, and I want to thank this beautiful listening audience for listening to my story, and I'm coming back with part two next month. So you tell everybody, Chicago's Tina Turner, Dorothy Roberson, will come back for part two of my story, how my unintended path led me to become one of the greatest Tina Turner tribute artists with true vocals to back it up. God bless everyone out there, and thank you for listening.